There was a debate last night.
My question to both of you is, would either of you name one positive thing that you respect in one another?
That was a viewing party we had with some young voters of last night's debate.
I don't think either of them fully respect what I want to see in the country. I think some people in the primaries had better options, but unfortunately, this is who we're stuck with.
This morning, we talked to some more college students about who they're voting for, why, and what issues they want to see addressed. Also,
even our attorney general, who is a strong Democrat, she has said that we need causation in our workers' comp system, and that's the number one thing pushing our manufacturing jobs out of Illinois.
What's causation, and how true is Governor Rauner's claim that current workers' comp laws are pushing manufacturing out of the state? PolitiFact Illinois weighs in. That's all coming up this hour on the 21st. Stay tuned. Welcome to the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. Last night, our team at the 21st went to watch the second presidential debate alongside students at the University of Illinois in Urbana-Champaign. We talked to a few students last night and wanted to share some of their reactions to the debate. Two of our producers, Sean Newman and Howla Delahi, put together a short montage of what we overheard.
The night really belongs to the people in this room and to people across the country who have submitted questions online.
My name's Anthony Gornia. So I don't know who I'm going to be going for. I can go either way. These presidential debates hopefully will help me figure that out by November.
It's just off the good that someone with the temperament of Donald Trump is not in charge of the law in our country.
Because you'd be in jail.
It's like,
I would have to say that I don't really trust Hillary Clinton as much as most of the people do. Personally, everything that her story passed.
But if I win, I am going to instruct my attorney general to get a special prosecutor to look into your situation, because there is nothing in some of the lies.
Hi, I'm Jake. If you looked at this debate, you can see that between the insults that he made, the blatant lies that he had, means that he is clearly not prepared or competent to be a president.
My question to both of you is, regardless of the current rhetoric, would either of you name one positive thing that you respect in one another?
My name's Andrew, and I'm honestly a moderate independent. Right now, I am in the center as opposed to the two candidates. I don't think either of them fully respect what I want to see in the country. I think some people in the primaries had better options, but unfortunately, this is who we're stuck with. I'd like to see more actually solid statements of what they're going to do. A lot of tonight was dodging around the questions and not actually providing a solid plan or plan of attack of what they're going to do.
Thanks to Halua and Sean for that. All this week, we're going to be talking to different segments of the voting population as we're taking part in another nationwide NPR Nation Engage project. This week, we're talking about what it means to be an American now. So today, we're asking, what does it mean to be a young American voter? For those of you thinking, not another millennial conversation, we should point out to you that according to census data, this is likely the last election that will be dominated by baby boomers and older voters. We've got three college students here from across the state. Chris Baker is voting for Hillary Clinton, and he joins us on the phone from Rockford, Illinois at Augustana College. Drew Minnick is voting for Donald Trump, and he's in studio with us in Urbana. Alex Villanueva is also in studio with us. He's still undecided about who he's going to vote for in this election. Alex, Chris, Drew, thanks for being with us on the 21st. Welcome.
Thanks, Nyla.
Thank you, Nyla.
Yeah, thank you very much.
So let's start, Chris, with the debates last night. Alex, you and I and Drew were watching together at U of I. We had a good crowd. There were a couple hundred students, mostly students, watching. Chris, I assume you were watching in Augustana. What did you think about how the debate went last night?
I really wasn't very impressed by what I saw, actually. I thought it was really out of control. I don't know. It was. I don't think a lot of actual policy got discussed, and it was a lot of intense, like, anger between the candidates. But overall, I would say it was actually probably one of the worst debates I've ever seen. So, yeah, not very good.
Yeah, thanks for that, Chris. And by the way, I should say, sorry, Rock Island, not Rockford. Alex, what did you think about last night?
I thought it was quite a show. I mean, I think it was it'd be really interesting to watch if it was on SNL, but I think it was
unfortunately real life, not SNL, right?
Absolutely. It was not a lot of policy, a lot of arguing, a lot of bickering, and I think a lot of just intensity in the room. A lot of the body language was you know, very combative, and I just don't think it's a good sign for our country, and at least definitely for this election.
Drew, this debate did not change or waver any of your opinions about Donald Trump.
Actually, I came into the debate pretty nervous. Donald has not had the best week. But once again, Hillary had the opportunity to put the final nail in his coffin and failed. I saw a cage match last night, and it was extremely exciting, very high energy. Well, yeah, policy may not have been discussed. There was a lot of action, and I think that American voters are very divided on this, and it's very healthy to see enhanced competition or exciting rhetoric between the candidates.
We talked to a lot of students last night, and we didn't get all of them into the piece that we played earlier, so I want to play a couple other cuts of tape from students we talked to. And a lot of the students, we said, agreed with you guys in terms of the fact that they felt like there wasn't a very professional tone to this and that it wasn't, quote, presidential at all. Here's what Jake had to say.
If you looked at this debate, you can see that between the insults that he made, the blatant lies that he had, means that he is clearly not prepared or competent to be a president.
Well, that was what Jake's comments about Donald Trump. Alex, let's go to you because you're Republican. You've been, and you said this week, and I saw your Facebook post saying, okay, at this point, I'm going to join, I think we're up to now 53 major Republican politicians who are saying they won't support Donald Trump. And I should note to our audience in Illinois, that includes Representatives Rodney Davis, Bob Dole, Adam Kinzinger, and Senator Mark Kirk. Governor Rauner has not definitively said he would vote for Trump. He did weigh in and said he was disgusted by what happened this weekend. Is that for you, Alex? Was that kind of for you, the events this weekend, the videotape that resurfaced of Donald Trump's comments that he made about women in 2005? Was that kind of for you the final, I can't vote for this guy?
I wouldn't say it was the final, I can't vote for this guy. I think I had decided about a month ago that I don't think I can do it. And I was kind of quiet about it. And I think, you know, a lot of my friends were always pestering me, Alex, are you going to vote for Trump? Are you going to vote for Trump? And I think the other day, it was just like, I'm okay with saying I'm not. You know, I'm okay with going public on it and, you know, deciding that this is not the candidate that I want to represent me. You know, but neither is Hillary Clinton. You know, I don't want her to represent me either. So at this point, I'm kind of in limbo. You know, I campaigned for Rubio. I voted for John Kasich and I vote in New York. So, I mean, we'll see what happens on November 8th, who I end up writing in, or if I maybe, you know, vote Libertarian.
Drew, you have been steadfast in your support of Donald Trump from the beginning. Why do you think he's the best candidate for president?
Well, I think that as someone who's voted Republican in previous elections, I have seen underwhelming candidate after underwhelming candidate. Mitt Romney and John McCain are not exciting. They were not able to get Republican voters energized. And despite several of Donald Trump's shortcomings, I think that as a movement to bring the Republican Party into the future, because ideologically I'm a libertarian, I do not agree with many of Donald Trump's views. However, I'm casting my vote in November for a changing force. And I see a lot in Donald Trump what fellow young voters saw in Bernie Sanders. While the semantics of, say, his controversial comments are disheartening to hear, that's not something I would ever say or something I can relate to when I discuss other people whom I respect. But I think all in all, Donald Trump represents a net good. He is against money in politics. The establishment, which I think brought so many Republican voters to the primary polls, more Republicans than have ever voted in a primary, they went out to support him. And they realized that this message of globalism, of the United States selling its soul to international institutions, may not necessarily be the best direction for this country. And while he may not be able to list every law in the books, while he may not be a politician historically, he has a lot of the energy that I think is necessary for a changing candidate.
That's Drew Minnick. He's an accounting major. He's a senior. This is your second election that you've voted in, right, Drew?
Yes.
Chris, let me ask you why you are at Augustana College. I know you're the opinions editor of the Augie, the newspaper there. Why have you been, and you've been very vocal about your support for Hillary Clinton. Why do you think why is she your candidate?
I think she's my candidate mainly because, you know, she has a lot of experience. She kind of knows the job better than anyone else. She's more qualified than any other person has ever been to be president. I should say I'm also critical of her, just like everyone else.
Right, because you were originally a Bernie Sanders supporter, right?
Exactly. I was originally a Bernie Sanders supporter, although I had some problems with some of his policies. I thought maybe he was a little bit out there. But for the same reason as people support Donald Trump, you know, I supported him. It was that he was, you know, kind of a game changer, came in. We didn't hear the same rhetoric we heard with other candidates with him. We heard a lot more progressive tones. I think it kind of drove people away. But I should say I'm a supporter for Hillary, and I'm also very sympathetic towards people who want to vote for Donald Trump. It's one of those situations where I understand why they're frustrated, why they feel like they're not being heard, and why they would vote for someone who's anti-establishment or, like, not part of the typical routine in politics. But the problem is he really has no idea what he's doing. So he's on stage. He's in, you know, kind of scandals, like, every week. It's, you know, everything he says can be it attacks on some level or another. He just doesn't have the experience. So Hillary, at the end of the day, you know, I don't maybe agree with having someone else that's definitely establishment in there, but I do agree with someone who knows what they're doing, has a clear direction, is very obvious about that direction, someone that knows what they're doing, basically. And that's why I'm really supporting her.
Let's talk about the issues, guys. I wonder if you can, and Alex, I wonder if you can say for you, as someone, you're a poli-sci history major, you're graduating this year, you're a senior. Can you explain to me what you think the biggest issues are for you as a young voter that you feel like should be addressed?
I think I'm different than a lot of other young voters because for me, I think our place in the world to me matters a lot. You know, that's as a safe nation, a nation that can survive on its own feet without being threatened by terrorists around the world, by extremists around the world, and that economically maintains its place at the forefront of the world. I think the world is a better place when the United States is taking the lead. And I think, you know, over the past 8 years, you know, and really past 16 years, the United States has kind of lost that place. You know, some mistakes made by the Bush administration in the Middle East, and I think definitely some mistakes made by the Obama administration in the Middle East, and for that matter, some of the mistakes that were made by Hillary Clinton in as Secretary of State. I think John Kerry has done a very good job fixing a lot of her mistakes, and for me, that's what's important. It's our security and our place in the world, and that you know, a lot of that ties into a strong economy here at home, a happy populace here at home that's at peace with each other. And I think that culminates in our place on the global stage.
Chris, for you, what are the most important issues in this election?
Well, I think my first and foremost is probably our divide here at home. Like, there is a lot of divide in the U.S. right now. It's very partisan. It just kind of come around. Things have kind of gotten a little more aggressive recently. But in general, I think that's the most important one. I think it's also important to recognize that we have environmental issues. I think it's really disheartening to listen to politics and have half of the politicians in there just simply denying science and fact. I think that's a really dangerous path to go on for, you know, whatever reason they may be doing it. I think they're intentionally ignoring reality in that regard. And then I probably rank the economy as number three most important thing in this election. And I think that things could be stronger back home. So mm-hmm. I would like to see a candidate who focuses on that a little bit too.
Drew, what about you? You're a senior. You're an accounting major, so I'm guessing you're not worried about finding a job when you graduate. But how much is the economy? What are the biggest issues for you?
Well, I do agree with Chris. I think the divide that this country has is terrible. And right now, the way the system works is predicated on pitting people against each other. And I think in order to fix that problem, we need to really get behind candidates who say what they mean and mean what they say. Hillary, as her leaked Wall Street speeches revealed, she has a public voice and a private voice. And I think something like that's really dangerous. And additionally, as a member of the Model United Nations team here at the university, I am very enthused in international issues, which is why I think that we need a very drastic change. People call Donald Trump a dangerous force for international affairs, but let's just look at the past 8 years. The civil war in Libya exploded. We got involved, and now the country's in disarray. Egypt is once again in the hands of a dictator. The South China Sea continues to be militarized. Russia has invaded Ukraine, and we still don't really talk about it. And Syria in that situation is the biggest joke nobody's laughing at. I think that we need a lot of change in our foreign policy. And regardless of your stance on what Donald Trump said about the Iraq War, he believes it was a mistake. And I wholeheartedly believe, as a child who grew up through the 9/11 age, that our involvement in Iraq and our increased involvement in the Middle East is one of the worst foreign policy mistakes we've ever made.
And what about Russia? Because you mentioned that there's been a lot of conversations about Donald Trump and Russia and the statements he's made about Vladimir Putin. Do you feel like his position on Russia and the Ukraine and the Crimea in general is something you're satisfied with?
Well, I find it funny when President Obama was running, he said, "I will be the candidate who can build a positive relationship with our adversaries like Russia. Russia will get along with us." They do not. I don't think anybody questions that our relationship with Russia is still very bitter. And as they continue to fight in foreign wars, they run directly counter to our interests. It's not positive. However, now the Republican candidate is receiving positive remarks from President Vladimir Putin.
Is that a good thing?
Well, you know, if we're going to talk about building bridges with Russia, let's get a candidate who at least can start the conversation, because Hillary Clinton continues to demonize Russia, and Donald Trump has received praise from him. And they acknowledge that Putin, despite being an authoritarian leader and running his country very different than us, we're moving in the right direction.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to continue this conversation with Drew and Chris and Alex. You're listening to The 21st. Stay tuned. Thanks for tuning in to The 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. We're talking to college students about this upcoming election. It's the day after the second presidential debate. We've been hearing about their conversation. We've been having a pretty substantial conversation about the issues they think are important in this election. I have to say probably more substantial than happened last night, right, guys? In studio with me in Urbana, Drew Minnick and Alex Villanueva, both of them Republicans. Drew is definitely voting for Donald Trump. Alex is still undecided as to what he's going to do. On the line with us from Rock Island and Augustana College is Chris Baker. He's voting for Hillary Clinton. We were talking about foreign policy, and I wanted to shift to talking about the economy because you guys both mentioned this, and I wanted to play a little bit of a conversation we had with another student. His name is a University of Illinois student. His name is Anthony Gornia, and his major concern was the country's economy. Here's what he had to say.
As an economics major, I definitely want to see positive economic policy plans coming out of both candidates, and probably as well, maybe some more on science technology. I know we're kind of lagging in recent years, so I want to see if we can get back up on that higher plane like we were in the 50s and 60s.
And here were his thoughts on which candidate he thought would best carry out those plans.
I want to say Donald Trump only because he does have the business experience and he's been working for many years in real estate and other various enterprises similar. So I think that he may have the economic knowledge compared to Hillary Clinton's largely political background.
Chris, what's your response to that? Do you think that Hillary Clinton has a sufficient enough background to handle the economy?
I think she does. I think that she's recognized what people are concerned about in the United States with their economy. For one thing, she has offered plans to try and prevent companies from going overseas or to take away the incentives to do so, such as the corporate exit tax, to try and hold jobs back home. The other thing that she does that she recognizes is a really complicated issue is that she wants to make things like college debt free. And this is really important considering our economy. The nature of our economy has shifted. It's no longer an economy where you can go to a factory and work and get really decent wages and have a really comfortable lifestyle. This is it's more of a type of economy where you have to have like a really strong education to get ahead, and you basically have to go through more debt and stuff to get there. This isn't something that this isn't the classic American dream where you can just be an honest, hardworking American blue collar and still be very comfortable. And I think she recognizes that.
Alex, what do you think? Do you think that she's and it's interesting, Chris brought up college tuition. That's one thing we haven't talked about. I don't know how important an issue that is to you, college loans, college debt, if you feel like that's something that politicians should be talking about and handling.
I mean, I think politicians should be talking about it, absolutely. If not in 16, definitely in 20 and 24, as our debts will probably still be there come 2020, 24, and, you know, I don't know, maybe 2036 even. So I think that's a really important issue, and I think I think Hillary Clinton has knowledge on the economy. I think Donald Trump knows how the system works a lot more, right? I mean, Hillary Clinton knows how to play the political game. Donald Trump knows how to play the economic game. And I think that plays a lot into his favor, and I think that's why so many, you know, middle class and lower class Americans that, you know, they just don't make that much money. That's why they see him, even though he's a billionaire, they identify with him as a job creator, as someone that has hired people to do things other than, you know, write legislation or help enact policy. These are people that have built jobs in all over the world. And I think that's why people kind of see that. And I think, you know, a lot of college students, they see, you know, they want a job after they graduate. And I think, you know, a lot of the reasons why we see such a drastic change from 30, 40 years ago, I mean, neither of my grandfathers had even a high school diploma. Yet, you know, one of them was able to retire a very, very wealthy man. And I think that's just the change in how we view ourselves. We don't value blue-collar jobs anymore. We don't train people for blue-collar jobs. I can guarantee you that someone with a trade degree from Clinton Community College in New York is going to make more money for the first 10 years of their life than I'm going to with a degree in history and political science. So I think there's an attitude problem and a kind of visualization of who the American worker should be in this country.
And to that attitude problem, Drew, I wanted to ask you about the tone of this campaign. You voted 4 years ago. You were a senior in high school. This is certainly an unprecedented election for the amount of anger and passion and, frankly, just drama that has happened. And I wonder what you think about that tone, what you would like to see, if this is something that you think is appropriate, if you think we're not on a good path, if you're thinking about – and you guys are sort of the future generation of voters. I wonder if you think that this sets a bad precedent for the next 4 years or 8 years or subsequent elections.
Well, I think it's very disappointing to see the tone that this election has taken. It is very negative, very attacking, and I believe that is being perpetrated by both sides. You see, the Democrats have continued their traditional policy of let's call the other guy racist. Let's take every minority group, whether that is African Americans, whether that is the Hispanic community, whether that is homosexuals. They tell that group, if you do not fall in line behind us and you don't put all your support behind Hillary Clinton, you are morally failing your demographic. And I think that is incredibly dangerous. This idea of identity politics has taken over the Democratic Party. And for someone like me who does not fall in the traditional conservative demographic, I think that it's very worrisome to see that a very narrow set of issues has come to define an entire ethnic group that I think faces diversity of problems.
Mm-hmm. Chris, what do you think about the tone? What would you like to see? You're talking to other students at Augustana. How do they feel about how this election has gone? Do you feel like it's turned people off to the election? Maybe they're not going to vote?
I don't think that. I think that more people are going to vote probably now more than ever, only because it's such a polar system. But I think the issue is I really don't think the Democrats do have to tell anyone who they're voting for, how to vote, or, you know, make an identity issue. I think the Republican nomination this year has made it very clear this way how he feels about things. And I don't think anyone has to tell people how they should feel about what he says. You know, when he does say people are, you know, Mexicans are racist and drug dealers and stuff like that. When his first videos coming out was, you know, horrifying. Now we almost kind of expect it. So it's an issue that I think people are going to be more attracted to voting for or, like, about. You know, they don't have to be told how to identify and stuff like that. And I think the idea that this isn't a big deal, that this is just, you know, nonsense politics, we're not focusing on the big issues. I think for a lot of people this is the big issue, that somehow in politics they're still seeing racial bias and they're seeing racism being tolerated, even, like, applauded by some people.
Mm-hmm. Alex, last question, and I'm going to ask you guys all this last question. as I mentioned at the beginning, we're talking about all week, we're having conversations about what it means to be an American today. And I would just want to remind everybody that the numbers show, there's some Pew data, we tweeted it out if you follow 21st Show, that shows this is probably the last election where baby boomers and that older generation, so baby boomers, will be the largest voting bloc. And given that, especially, I wonder what's the most important issue you think facing your generation, Alex?
I think facing our generation, a lot of it is, the economy, jobs. And I think going back to this kind of conversation of how do we see ourselves? Do we see ourselves as a divided country or do we see ourselves all as Americans? And I think the politics on both sides is that we have walked away from the high of the 1990s or the early 90s after the Soviet Union fell, we're all Americans, we defeated communism, our economy was growing, our stance in the world, we were finally solidified as the single power really in the world. And I think that's changed. I think that's changed. And I think that's an issue that a lot of young people will face. And that ties in with the economy. That ties in with, how much am I paying for college education? Is it worth it? It's paying for it. Am I going to get a job? It's going to be, can I start a family? Can I buy a house? And for a lot of those answers are looking bleak for young people. We'll see where it goes from there. And I don't think this election will be a watershed moment. Mm-hmm. For that, I think this election will not be good for those answers.
Drew, most important issue for you?
I think Alex definitely hit the nail right on the head when he talked about answers. But to me, questions are important. Young people need to learn that it is okay to question the way things work. Bernie Sanders showed that, and Donald Trump continues to show that through his candidacy. It's okay to ask questions. It's okay to say what's on your mind, because our generation was taught to be yourself. And I think that the political climate nowadays is so hostile to people who may not hold a popular opinion. And just because that popular opinion might disagree with you does not mean it should be silenced, and means that it still deserves to be listened to, because no matter who you are in America, whether you're upper class or lower class or first generation or 10th generation, you have just as much a right to express your views and to be heard.
Chris?
Yeah, I actually agree with both of those comments. You should never silence opinions because you don't agree with them, and I think we do see this a little bit with our younger generations. And then I agree with asking questions and getting the truth out of politics. That those are two things I really respect, because that's something I talk about all the time. But I think the biggest issue we should start talking about is, how are we going to look to the future? We can't keep looking back at, how great America was through the 1900s or how we went to the moon and stuff like that. We can't keep glorifying the past. I think it's important for our generation to recognize that we need to start actually working forward towards new goals. We need to start incentivizing companies to solve climate problems, and we need to start finding ways to actually have peace in places without having to attack people. I think it's stuff like that. We need to start looking forward and stop obsessing about who we were back in the day when we were so fantastic.
That's Chris Baker. I want to thank also Drew Minnick and Alex Villanueva for joining me. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Nala.
We've been hearing from responses to last night's presidential debate from this panel of millennials across Illinois on all sides of the aisle. And we wanted to continue that discussion now with a political commentator and open up to our listeners. Your thoughts on last night's debate, you can give us a call at 1-800-222-9455. You can tweet to 21st Show. We're joined now by Carol Felsenthal. She's an author, a magazine writer, and a blogger for Chicago Magazine, Politico, and The Hill. Carol, welcome back to the 21st. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Before we continue the discussion we've been having on young voters, I'd love to hear your thoughts on last night's debate. What are your big takeaways from last night, Carol?
Well, first of all, before I start, I was so impressed with those guys that you just...
That's probably the most thoughtful discussion that I've had so far this election season, I think, voters. So,
the millennials get such a bad rap. And when Donald Trump and Billy Bush were having that vulgar conversation on the bus on the way to a TV show, I heard all the time, they sound just like frat boys. And we hear so many terrible things about frat boys. I don't know whether these guys are members of fraternities, but they really had the situation I summed up very well. I thought last night's debate was about 95% just depressing. I can't believe that the choice has come down to between Hillary Clinton, who is beginning to look even worse as these emails have been released over the last few days. It came up a bit in the debate. There's another a bunch of them coming out today as we speak. The Clinton campaign is saying, well, we don't know that they're authentic, but I think if they weren't authentic, they would be jumping up and down and screaming it. And then the idea of Donald Trump, who really showed that he doesn't know what he's talking about on the issues, and while he was far more lively and far more pointed, and one would think he would have been suffering some kind of exhaustion breakdown, he had a lot of energy. He just looks like somebody who cannot possibly be the leader of a major power. And the other thing I was thinking about when these young men were talking to you is it's really kind of sad. I think in a way, I'm 67, so I'm a member of the baby boom generation. But to me, it's kind of sad that we have two people who look so exhausted and whose ideas are so exhausted running for president.
Well, and we think about this, Carol. You're a veteran of covering so many presidential campaigns, and thinking about the level of personal attacks that we saw last night, there was a lot of comments on social media about how childish both candidates seemed. And that level of back and forth, I mean, would you say that it's unprecedented? Have we ever seen anything like last night in a presidential debate?
No. You know, I've been watching debates. I was a kid in 1960 when JFK debated Richard Nixon, and I've watched every election since then, and I've watched so many debates. But last night, you would have thought we were kind of, you know, quasi or pseudo electing the president of a banana republic. It was just when Donald Trump said, and then murmured it while Hillary was talking, when he said, you know, you should be in prison, and I'm going to order my attorney general, which would probably be Giuliani or Chris Christie, which is just bizarre to think about, to appoint a special prosecutor and investigate you. He can't order his attorney general is independent. It's something that you would expect in a country where there's no respect for democracy. And he didn't even realize it. While I thought the moderators were good, they should have called him on that.
Did we get a better sense of either candidate's policies or positions last night?
I don't think so, no. I think that we did not. We never get an idea of Donald Trump's positions because they're so scattered. I think, and we didn't get one from Hillary Clinton because she was, I thought, so off her game. She was so fine, excellent in the first debate, and she was mediocre at best last night. It's like she's worried. They're both scared to death about what's going to come out between last night and November 8th. The thing is just up in the air. And when Donald Trump, you know, I think that there are Republicans who simply will not vote for Hillary Clinton for all kinds of reasons. But when they heard Donald Trump say, I didn't talk to Mike Pence, I don't share his views on Syria at all.
Yeah, it's a remarkable moment, Carol.
That was so frightening because you think of Mike Pence as being a steady and able presence and partner to Donald Trump, and now Donald Trump is off on his own and having press conferences with
Carol, let me stop you there because we're going to have to take a break. We're going to continue this conversation in just a minute with Carol Felsenthal. You're listening to The 21st. You're listening to The 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. My guest is Carol Felsenthal. She's an author, magazine writer. She blogs for Chicago Magazine. You can catch her also writing for Politico and The Hill. Carol, I wanted to ask you about the first part of the show, you know, as you were just tuning in, as we were talking with those three college students, those three young men from across Illinois, and how engaged they were in the campaign. We had a watch party at the University of Illinois last night. We had about, I'd say, at least 200 students show up to watch the debate with us. Mostly students, I would say, the crowd at the Illini Union, super engaged as they were during the first debate when I was there. There were hundreds at the Union, your alma mater, I should add, watching the debate. So Carol, the inside of the Illini Union completely packed with students. They were in the doorways of the courtyard watching this debate. I want to ask you about how you think the Trump and Clinton campaigns have engaged with young voters, because we know that I'm thinking particularly about young voters in Illinois, because you know, you have a clear knowledge of how much President Obama was able to do that with young voters, especially in Illinois, in Chicago, in his hometown. How are you seeing voter involvement in the campaigns this year? Do you feel like there's resonation? Like, are they resonating as much as maybe Bernie Sanders had, as Obama had 4 years ago? Do you think Clinton and Trump have that level of support?
Oh, definitely not. I think their support is middle age and older. I think that the more that comes out, to take Hillary Clinton first, in these emails that she said at those private speeches. Remember, Bernie Sanders was trying to get those transcripts during the primary debate, and she refused. Well, we know now why she did. She said she was for open borders, open trade. This morning I'm hearing that she's for fracking, which was a big issue of controversy between her and Bernie Sanders. What will happen with the pipeline? She's probably going to be pushed on that. Her saying in one of her private speeches, I believe, to a banking group, I have one face in public, one in private. Mm-hmm. The thing that was so interesting about Bernie Sanders is that he's so old to become president, and he's not a Democrat. He's a Democratic socialist, and yet young people adored him, and that the level of enthusiasm was huge. Now, Bernie Sanders has endorsed her and is supporting her and will be campaigning for her, but the trick is going to be to get students to get that level of enthusiasm building up inside them so that they're willing to, you know, stop studying for an exam or doing a paper or going to a bar and get out and vote. And also, the election on November 8th, that means that students will not be home where they may be registered, mm-hmm. as opposed to being registered in wherever they are in the country. And if they didn't get their absentee ballots, and I don't know that there's a weekend, maybe this weekend or next weekend, when students go home and they can do early voting, but they really have to be motivated. And it's certainly not the case that they're motivated like they were for President Obama or for Bernie Sanders. And as far as Trump goes, I can't imagine but that tape from 2005 doesn't matter that it's old. I think, as Hillary Clinton said, that's who this man is. And I think it's just a huge turnoff.
Yeah, and it is. And it's, as you say that, I'm thinking about Alex, who was our previous guest on our panel, is from New York. Chris was from Colorado. Both of them obviously super engaged. They had Illinois, the Young Democrats and Young Republicans last night voting, making sure people were registered. A lot of people were checking and realizing, oh, they're somewhere else. So that's definitely a big issue with college students, I know, in terms of where they're going to be voting and if they've requested ballots. Carol Felsenthal, thank you so much for joining us. As always, a pleasure to talk to you. You can find her writings in Chicago Magazine, online with the Politico, and for The Hill. Thanks so much, Carol.
Sure, anytime. Bye.
As we do this time on Mondays, we're talking politics with reporters covering the issues in Illinois. We just ended our chat with Carol Felsenthal. We wanted to devote this space, this Monday end of the show space, to fact-checking. With politicians making all kind of claims about themselves when flinging accusations at their opponents, we know that it's difficult at this time of year to sift truth from the lies. And we know there's lots of journalists who are working on that, including Reboot Illinois. They partnered with PolitiFact to take on that responsibility. Matt Dietrich is the editor of Reboot Illinois. The Pulitzer Prize winning website PolitiFact has partnered with Reboot Illinois to create PolitiFact Illinois. They're highlighting claims and going through them. Matt, welcome back to the 21st. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Nella. Great to be here.
The main claim that you all tackled recently was Governor Bruce Rauner's statements about workers' comp. And this has been a big source of contention with Governor Rauner, House Speaker Michael Madigan. It's been one of the big fights between Republicans and Democrats. And of course, Matt, this was a big workers' comp or reforming workers' comp to Governor Rauner's depiction of it was a key part of his turnaround agenda. And you all, I wanted to play a little bit of what Governor Rauner said about this recently.
Even our attorney general, who is a strong Democrat, she has said that we need causation in our workers' comp system. And that's the number one thing pushing our manufacturing jobs out of Illinois.
Okay, there's a lot in there. That's why you guys decided to take a look at this, right, Matt?
Right. He made that statement 3 weeks ago today, in fact, at a press conference in Springfield. And what he's talking about, he mentions the word causation. And he says that even our attorney general said we need causation in our workers' comp system. What he means by that is Illinois, causation is the burden of proof on the person who is claiming a workplace injury in a workers' compensation situation. And Governor Rauner and a lot of the business groups in the state have been saying for a long, long time that Illinois has very, very high workers' compensation insurance rates for businesses, seventh highest in the country. And they say it is because we have such a lax system of causation. And what that means is if you are injured on the job and you want to put in a claim for workers' compensation benefits, which means your
health care
treatment and paid time off, all you have to do in Illinois is prove that the workplace was in any way involved in that injury, whether it was a pre-existing condition or not. Now, a stronger standard of causation would mean that you have to prove that the workplace was the main cause of your injury, and that's what Bruce Rauner wants to enact in Illinois. So for him to say, and so he says, you know, in that quote, even our attorney general, who is a strong Democrat, well, anybody who's been paying attention knows that our attorney general's not just a strong Democrat, she's the daughter of Bruce Rauner's arch political rival Michael Madigan. And what we looked into was, is it true that she supports causation? And in just 4.5 years ago, in 2012, Lisa Madigan's office issued an opinion on it pertained to a bill that was in the legislature at the time that would have changed our causation in Illinois to a system like the one Bruce Rauner wants to enact.
Okay.
And what Lisa Madigan's office wrote at the time was that it is just about impossible for an employer to defend against a fraudulent workers' comp claim in Illinois because we have such a lax system of causation, because all they have to do is say, and there's an example in this opinion of an employee at a Circuit City store who got injured by banging up against a vending machine to knock down a bag of Fritos that their coworker had paid for but got hung up in the machine. So this worker goes banging against it, injured his arm or his shoulder or something, and ends up getting workers' compensation benefits for that because it was in the workplace, and the court found that this was a Good Samaritan case. The whole
That was in Lisa Madigan's
right
opinion. Okay,
and so we checked that, and then we went back to her office and said, "Hey, this was 2012. Do you still believe what was in this opinion?" And her chief of staff said, "Yeah, we do think that certainly there is something that could be done with causation." Where there's a little difference is in Governor Rauner's turnaround agenda. He wants to make it so that an injured employee, if you're claiming an injury on the job, you have to prove that the workplace is at least 51% responsible for your injury to get any workers' comp benefits. What the Attorney General's office said in that opinion 4 years ago and said when I talked to them a couple weeks ago was, well, we've never said exactly how you reform it, but we do think there is ample room for some reform here and to get a better system, because the Attorney General's office defends the state when it's a state employee who's filing a workers' comp claim. And what Lisa Madigan's office said in that decision 4 years ago was, look, we can't hardly do anything to defend ourselves against these. We are in exactly the same situation that private employers are in.
And Matt, if we think about that, so that's – we have what Lisa Madigan's office, so the attorney general, daughter of House Speaker Michael Madigan. We've heard from Governor Rauner. Now, we have House Speaker Michael Madigan, and when he's been talking about workers' comp reform, I wanted to play a little bit of what he said because he's been saying, look – Governor Rauner, what Governor Rauner is proposing would, quote, send injured workers to welfare and to the emergency room. Let's hear the full context of the most recent time he said that.
At no time during the deliberation on these issues did the governor lay down his current demand that his program be enacted, a program which would bring down the wages and the standard of living of middle-class families and send injured workers to welfare and to the emergency room.
All right. That's also audio that you guys have on the PolitiFact site that you all recorded. That's from January, right? From when a lot of
And he said it repeatedly since then. That was just one that we happened to post.
Right. And I guess the question is it sounds like the attorney general has room for movement on trying to fix some of this. Governor Rauner is in one place. Do we know where Speaker Madigan is with this?
Well, this is the problem. And this is something else that I wrote a little post about was if you look at what Lisa Madigan has said, she said, hey, let's get some discussion here. It doesn't have to be all one way. It doesn't have to be completely what Bruce Rauner wants, which was in the bill 4 years ago. But what we have here is what we've had for the last 18 months between Bruce Rauner and Mike Madigan. Bruce Rauner will not say he's never entertained any sort of a plan other than the one that's in his turnaround agenda. In other words, you get it's all the workplace's fault or you get nothing. Mike Madigan, on the other hand, says any change from what we have now is going to send workers to the welfare rolls and to the emergency room for medical treatment. So both these guys are holding on to their positions. They're not going to move one inch. And this is what the budget impasse is all about. This is probably the biggest issue, and then there are others. But this is something that is very frustrating, and I suspect that what they're doing is they're waiting until after the election, and we're going to see whose philosophy is winning. If Rauner picks up seats in the General Assembly, he's winning. Maybe Madigan will see it's time to compromise. Who knows? But both these guys are hanging on to their hardcore positions.
Matt, two quick questions about this. Governor Rauner has said repeatedly that Illinois has the highest worker compensation, are among the highest in the country. Is that accurate?
That is accurate.
And what about his claim that this is the number one thing that's pushing manufacturing jobs out of Illinois? We do know that manufacturing jobs, that is correct. We have been losing manufacturing jobs, especially year to year, correct?
Oh, yes. We lost a lot of manufacturing jobs. And in fact, I think the most recent figure showed that we lost about 11,000 over the past year.
Right. That's correct. It's almost 1,200 from August 2015 to August 2016, according to the Illinois Department of Employment Security. We do hear certainly some manufacturers say that workers' compensation is an important issue and businesses relocating to Illinois. Do you think it's also a reason they might be leaving Illinois?
It's possible. And this is one thing we don't really have empirical evidence to say all these companies moved or all these companies are not coming to Illinois because of this. But what the problem is that Illinois, when everybody else was recovering from the recession, our unemployment rate stayed stubbornly high. It's getting a little better now, but there has to be a reason. And, you know, it can't be helping. Let's just say that. It can't be helping. We didn't fact check that's the number one thing pushing manufacturing jobs out of Illinois, because that is something that we just, you know, that's not really fact checkable at this point unless we have an academic survey.
What's the PolitiFact rating on what Governor Rauner said about Lisa Madigan agreeing with him?
That was true. It's true.
And if people have suggestions for things they want, you all would like to fact check, they can just email you?
Email me at matt@rebootillinois.com.
I want to thank Matt Dietrich. He's the editor of Reboot Illinois. They're in partnership with PolitiFact Illinois, doing fact-checking all the way up to the election. We have tweeted out all of the links to Matt's stories on this. You can head to their website for that. Matt, thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Nyla.
We're out of time for today. As I mentioned at the beginning of the hour, all this week we're going to be focusing on different segments of the American population, talking about what it means to be an American today. Tomorrow we're going to be talking to African Americans in Illinois. We're going to be talking about voting. Reverend Jesse Jackson Jr. is going to be joining us to be part of that discussion. As always, you can give us feedback. Go to www.21stshow.org. That's how you can find our phone, email, social media. You can weigh in on the conversation there as well. I'm Nyla Boodoo. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can always find past shows as well on the NPR One app if you search for The 21st. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.